Welcome to the conference room with this week's guest, Nathan Burke.
I'm getting the story done first, to the point where when the product is there, that is the answer to the demand I've already built. It's like pre-demand. Then I already have a basis for how I'm going to add to that content. So I have the thought leadership part done, already built that. Now I can add the product piece to round it out. Then I can start doing that early demand gen and start putting it out there through content syndication, through webinars, through whatever.
Welcome to The Conference Room, a weekly podcast where business leaders and growth experts kindly share their experiences, actionable tips, and secrets to successfully grow a business. If you like the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a five-star review. It'll really help us out. And I really hope you enjoy this week's episode. I'm Simon Lader. Welcome to The Conference Room. Good afternoon and welcome to The Conference Room. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Nathan Burke. Nathan is the Chief Marketing Officer of Axonius, where he built and now leads the global effort for one of the highest growth cybersecurity vendors in the industry. He's built a career leading the international marketing for high growth, rapidly scaling technology companies such as Hexadite, who were acquired by Microsoft, Intralinx, CloudLock, and more. Nathan is a graduate of Northeastern University and recently made headlines by securing Axonius' sponsorship of US Olympic gold medalist Simone Biles. And I'm delighted to say he's given up some of his valuable time to join us right here in the conference room. So, Nathan Burke, good afternoon and welcome to the conference room.
How was that for an intro? I love it. Thanks for having me. This is going to be fun.
Great stuff. So every hero has an origin story and you're the hero of our story. So tell me, how did you get from graduating Northeastern to now leading one of the most exciting cybersecurity companies out there and rubbing shoulders with Olympic gold medalists?
You mean it wasn't just a straight line where all of it makes sense? No, no. Of course not. It never is, right? So, I'll start. I won't go all the way back, but I'll start right where you said left off. So I went to school for marketing, and I was going to Northeastern for marketing, and I realized I'm not learning anything. This is in the days before you ever even saw a laptop in a class. Gives you an idea how old I am, but it was something where it was just very, very basic, and I wasn't getting anything out of it. And I ended up taking a sociology course, and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, this is it. This is it. I'm learning how people behave in groups and applying, statistical research and really understand how people react in large groups. And I thought, this is what I wanted all along. And so I actually was going to, after I graduated, I was going to go do my PhD. And this was right after 9/11. And in 2002, when I graduated, everyone was going back to grad school. And I decided, you know what, I was going to hold off to do that. And instead, I went in a totally different direction, which is I, during school, had taught myself how to do some coding. And then for a few years after school, I was a web developer working at a law firm. And I did that for about 7 years in total. And so I learned to code, got dangerous enough technically to know what I was doing, and then started my first startup. I joined right after I left the law firm. And after that, being a part of a startup early on, I never looked back. I immediately fell in love. And since then, I've done five startups, three of them cybersecurity startups that I think you mentioned. The last one got acquired by Microsoft. The other one got acquired by Cisco. And now we were named the third fastest growing company by revenue last year by Deloitte. So it's been a lot of fun. It hasn't been a straight line, but I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Great stuff. So the thing I'm really kind of curious about, and I did kind of refer to this and you did as well about startups, is one of the main challenges that I see when I'm talking to people who are working for startups is how to actually get yourself heard over the noise, how to be noticed. Okay. And I know that there are, for intents and purposes, two different types of startups, or probably more. Ones where there's an established market and you're a startup company in an established market. Okay. So if we talk cybersecurity terms, a company that has a new web application firewall, okay? There are other companies that do it. Yours might be better, stronger, faster, whatever. But you're talking to an educated market about the problem you're solving, okay? And the tools with which you're solving them, okay? But a lot of the stuff that you've done in your career, you're kind of going and establishing the market and sometimes even educating customers about problems they didn't even realize they had, okay? So talk to me about the strategy that you have or you've developed where you're able to all intents and purposes, build a demand and build a market where one didn't exist.
Yeah, it's a great point because in a commodity market, the only thing you can do is be cheaper. So what you really want to do is you want to exist in a non-commodity market. And I think to do that, I believe we talked about this before, which is it's this idea that, you know, no one buys the shovel, they buy the hole it digs. And if someone isn't interested in digging a hole, I don't care how good your shovel is. So I think that's really important to focus on. And to me, it's been all about the story from the beginning, because unless you're different enough to garner that attention, it really won't matter. I mean, you might get them to a first call. So what I really try to build is a way to understand what are the net new capabilities I get if I'm going after this thing. Let's use your web application firewall or something similar to that, right? Well, why should I pay attention to this? What problem is it solving for me? What net new capabilities would I have? How can I quantify the value of it? And then I think from the marketing side, one of the most important things you could really focus on is the emotional ties to it. And I'll give an example there. So my last company, we were in the security automation space. And anytime you talk about automation, you run the risk of people either thinking to themselves or saying out loud, you're going to try to automate away my job. And to me, that was something I wanted to hit head on. And in fact, what we said there is, No. Security automation isn't something that's going to automate away people's jobs. Instead, security automation is the process of deciding what are things that a machine will always do better than a person and the things that a person will always do better than a machine. So we even led with that. We said, no, security automation is preventing people from doing a machine's job. You say, wait a second, hold on. Preventing people from doing a machine's job. So in security, are you doing a lot of manual stuff? Yes. Is it repetitive? Yes. Does it take a lot of thought? No, that's the stuff I want to do. I want to do the like really cool stuff where I'm investigating threats and I'm doing threat hunting and I'm doing the research. What do you spend time doing? Like counting machines and like looking for a machine based on an alert? Don't you think you could automate that? Yes. If I automated that, would you be out of a job? Absolutely not. That's what we should focus on. And I think getting a message that crisp and clear and being distinct and standing out in the market, that's the only way it works. And that's really what I've tried to do every time is, as soon as I see something that everyone else has already done, I run as fast as I can in the opposite direction. And so far it's worked.
Can you give me an example of that?
I've got a few. So in cybersecurity, I think if you closed your eyes and pictured what an ad or a booth at RSA or any kind of campaign for a cybersecurity company is, I bet you'd be pretty close to what everybody else thinks, right? You got hacker in a hoodie, you've got green matrixy text falling down, you've got military grade encryption, you've got all of these terms that are like very similar, meaningless, and not a lot of fun, right? You never see human beings in cybersecurity campaigns. So my thought is, I'm going to go all in there. And you'd mentioned at the outset, our campaigns with Simone Biles and with Amy Bream, who's a CrossFit athlete who was born with one leg. I thought, why not showcase people? Why not? And I wish I could tell you the next one that's coming up in like 18 days or something. It's going to be amazing, I promise you. But we went right for that. And we showcased the human side. We talked about overcoming adversity. I think Simone was a perfect example. We were just in DC a couple of days ago, and I had the pleasure of being on stage with Simone Biles and Jen Easterly, who's the director of CISA, the cybersecurity and infrastructure security agency for the U.S. government. And we had a panel about mental health in cybersecurity and defeating burnout. This is a conversation that wouldn't have happened. Wow. But I get to do these all the time because it's something that's different. It shows that these are human beings behind the keyboard. And I think that has really helped us stand out to the point where before we did any of these campaigns, we measured our aided recall at 9%. A year later, that was 20%. And then a total of 18 months into the campaign, we went from 9% at the beginning to 27% aided recall. It works because we stood out. We told a story that worked for human beings. People remembered it. And we now have people that have worked at our company because they saw those ads and they saw those campaigns. It's a win. And all it took was being different, standing out, and being human.
That's amazing. It really is.
And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Those sorts of metrics are extraordinary. So we talked a little bit about, and you refer to kind of standing out from the crowd, okay? And you're right, that's obviously where a crowd exists. But there have been a couple of times, particularly in your career, where there hasn't been a crowd because the challenge isn't so much of getting yourself heard above the noise, but getting yourself heard in the first place because you're trying to market a product where people aren't even necessarily aware that they have a problem, or that the problem they have isn't something that just they live with, right? So how do you overcome that? What sort of strategies would you have to market something where there's an ill-defined market in the first place?
Sure. And yeah, I've done that several times. And I think the beauty of that too is that, so for everything, there's a blessing and a curse on either end, right? It's, on the one hand, if you're in a known category, there's probably already a line item for a budget. So that's a good conversation. But at the same time, you've got a lot of competition, right? So there's pluses and minuses for all of this. But I think what's beautiful about creating a category is you get to define it, right? It isn't something they have a preconceived notion about. And whether it's a category of cybersecurity asset management, or now Gartner calls it Chasm, or security automation when we were starting there and then it became SOAR, you get to define it. And what we would always do in those conversations is really ask the question. And first, it has to be an acute or painful enough problem that it's worth someone solving, right? And I always do this in the early days and just have these conversations of, how do you deal with this problem now? And if it's a problem of asset management, like at Exonius, it's, well, I've got an Excel file. Oof, that's tough, right? How do you keep that up to date? I don't. What do you do when there's an audit? Everyone drops everything. What do you do when you need to do something around compliance? Or if you're a bigger company, have an M&A event? Well, that's a real problem, right? If you could solve it, would you? Well, yeah, but it'd have to be easy. Okay, well, let's talk about that. So what are the five things that are involved in security automation? Well, it's first to understanding what are the ideal steps that that a human being would do. And then understanding what's the next action. And then what are the other investors? So you get to actually have that conversation and then say, these are five things that would be required, right? Would you agree with that? Yes. If you could do this, would it be worth your time? Yes. How much time are you spending now? All right, I'll tell you. So understanding that and then quantifying that. So what we did at Exadite, we do it at Exonius too, is really try to understand how to quantify the value of solving that problem. And so for the security automation one, it was, all right, how many people on your incident response team? Well, I've got 3. How much do they get paid? Multiply that out. How many investigations can they do a day? All right, great. So we do the math based on 4 pieces of information. We say, right now you're investigating 10% of your alerts and you're paying X amount. If you wanted to get to 100, you could either hire more people. Good luck. It would cost you $9, $10 million. Or you could use automation and it would cost this. 4 pieces of information, we could show you exactly what you could do and the value of doing that and what else they could do with their time that's not just chasing down alerts. And I think you've got to have all of that. Put that all together and I think you have a pretty compelling case to be made. Now, the product has to do it. If you make a great case and tell a great story and the product doesn't work, that's not a good outcome. But I think if you really do have a product that works and it is something that stands out and you're just saying, if only the world knew about it, I think getting to that point where you know, in your 10 slide deck, if I've got a conversation with the right person, on slide 2, I got them to laugh. On slide 3, they weren't exactly sure if what I put in front of them made sense. On 4, they understood it. On 5, they're like, let's just get to the demo. Once you get to that point and it's repeatable, then you can start doing things with demand gen and really hitting the gas on it. But I think a lot of companies do it out of order, right? They'll try to promote something to the world before the product is ready. You get one chance and there goes your reputation. Or you do it in the other direction and you wait till the product's perfect and then you're expecting demand gen to fire up tomorrow when you don't have the story right. So it really is a balance. It's not easy, but you can do those things in parallel. And that's how I've always approached it. And so far it's worked.
So what would you say is the right order then? So when you talk about scaling, you just talked about the story, okay? Mm-hmm. So obviously the product has to work, okay? So you got a great, product. So in your mind, it's we've got a great product. Then we build the story and the justification why people should take this seriously and why people should then agree to see a demo. And then at that point, it's a case of putting all the demand gen elements in place.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure there's multiple ways to do it, but the way I've done it is, like, I'll use Exonius as an example. I started in November 2017. We didn't have a product yet. And so all of 2018, first of all, was me having conversations with people that would not have taken my call if I had a product to sell them. Right? They're much more willing to talk to you if you're saying, listen, we're building this thing. I'm not trying to sell you anything yet. I'm trying to validate this approach. Can I have 30 minutes with you just to make sure that I'm doing this right? And I can't tell you how many people will say yes that wouldn't say yes if you said, and in the end, I'm going to try to sell you this thing. So I start there and say, I'm trying to get my arms around this. How many devices do you have? And they say, oh, between 80 and 140,000. I must be missing something here. Because it just seems like it's, 2019, 2020, and we should have had this solved by now, right? Well, yeah. Okay. If you were just to be able to connect to all these different things that know about your devices, and we were able to correlate it, deduplicate it, all this stuff, wouldn't that tell you? Well, yeah. All right. So let me just talk through it. So right now, the challenge with this other approach is this, and endpoint approach is this. Yes. Okay. All right. So I understand it. So I'm having those early conversations before and as we're building that product. And that'll inform some of the product stuff, but also helps me understand, why vulnerability scanning fails for asset management. Well, because it only sees what it sees, right? And then I can build that content. So I'm doing that early on. I'm building that content that doesn't ever mention our product. Because early demand gen, I want to have around thought leadership. I want to have around, there's this problem that's only getting worse. Because once I get to a point where I have something that'll solve it, then I have that content as well. But I'm starting there. And I can also use that to say, well, I'm seeing much more search volume or much more engagement or higher readership or downloads or whatever for this use case versus this use case versus this one. So I'm building that early demand gen content already before I have a product because they can consume that. They can sign up and say, I'm ready when the beta is there, whatever. But I do that early days. And now I know what's landing. And I understand that parts of the stories that people get confused on. Just quick example, I won't go too far off here. Our first deck at Exonius, I'd get to the same slide every time. They're like, so wait a second, when do I install the agent? I'm like, I don't understand what you're talking about. I just said like, it's agentless. And then I even put two slides later. I'm like, deployment. It's this way. No agent. Three bullet points, no agent. And I get to the demo. They'd be like, so where do I install the agent? I'm like, something's not working here. And I had to like change the way and recalibrate that because everyone had this preconceived notion of the only way to do this is have something on every machine. So we had to change the structure and the narrative and hit that at multiple different points because people don't show up with a clear slate. They're already thinking about other ways they've done it in the past. So sorry, that was a little bit of a sidetrack, but I think you get the idea. I'm getting the story done first to the point where when the product is there, that is the answer to the demand I've already built. It's like pre-demand. Then I already have a basis for how I'm going to add to that content. So I have the thought leadership part done, already built that. Now I can add the product piece to round it out. Then I can start doing that early demand gen and start putting it out there through content syndication, through webinars, through whatever. And it's a slow build, no question. But I would rather have all of that done in a way that's been pre-vetted by other people than to say, all right, we got a product. Now we're missing all this content. What do we do?
Right. Okay. And I would imagine that by having all the content already there, you're already building up a reputation online. You're building up. You've already got, when the product's ready to at least like have beta, you've probably got a bunch of beta customers signed up. You've got an enormous email marketing list. So all of those kind of critical factors that people, when they want to start selling, suddenly go, oh, right, now we've got product. We need a list. You're like, dude, I've been building this list for 18 months, right? So it's already
just, you spend that first time, the first few months, you're just a resource. You want nothing in return. It'd be nice if they sign up for stuff, sure, but you're not hitting them immediately and trying to get them on a product demo. So you're just a resource. You, a great type of content for this is, you know, the metrics that matter for X, whatever it is that you're going to build, because obviously you're going to be able to solve that problem too, but you're going to see there are people out there that are looking to say, how do I judge the return on investment of my whatever? And you build real content around that, because people look for that all the time. And if you're a resource, that's always a good thing. And they have, you know, a perception of you before you even have a product to sell them. So yeah, that's exactly what you do. Just be resourceful, give them value from the beginning. Don't, you're not asking for anything in return, but by the time you have something to ask for, they're already thinking positively of you.
That's amazing. Okay. I've got to ask, how did you get Simone Biles?
We asked.
Come on. So here's, come on.
Yeah. But that's the real answer. So very long story short, we were trying to figure out how to boil down what we do into something really succinct and compelling. And
so tell me again, little bit more about what exactly is that Axonius does. Just give it a little bit more context. Yeah,
actually, that's a really good, that's a better place to start. So at Axonius, what we do is we try to answer the question, if you knew everything about your environment, all of your devices, all of your users, app, software, SaaS applications, you name it. If you knew everything about your environment and all of your security tools and controls and the intersection of those things, if you knew all of that today, what could you do differently than you could do yesterday? And it's a pretty simple idea. We simply connect to all of the different data sources that know about assets. So all of your tools, your networking gear, your endpoint protection, your VA scanners, your cloud instances, all of those things. We gather that information, we correlate it, and then we can show you the intersection of those things. So for example, if I say, which of my Windows machines are missing an endpoint agent? I can see that very, very simply. What are my cloud instances that aren't being scanned and have public IPs and are exposed to anyone on the internet? Right? These are all questions that seem pretty simple, but they're very, very complicated because they're spanning multiple data silos. So that's exactly what we do. We let you see what you have, understand where there's risk, and then automate action. So what I just said is a great example of, well, that's a lot of words. How do you boil that down to something concise and compelling? And I started working on this idea, and it'll sound nerdy because it is. And I kept thinking back to the second law of thermodynamics. And that's the idea that over time, everything gets more complex, every system. And that's true, right? And you can think of that in your work and definitely in cybersecurity, right? The bigger our companies are, the bigger the networks, the more tools we have, the more devices. We have just very, very complex environments. And so over time, things get more complex. And I kept thinking this idea of what we really do is we let our customers control complexity. Simple. And then I thought, well, all right, that's two words. Who out there is someone that is the example of someone that has overcome adversity, has a lot of complexity in their lives, but is able to get past that and grow? And so everyone I talked to for like a month, I would ask this question, like, all right, I've got this idea. It's controlling complexity. Name someone, whether it's a celebrity, a public figure, whatever, who is the example you have of someone that can do that? And they'd give me other answers. I'm like, my answer is Simone Biles. Simone Biles grew up in the foster care as a foster kid. She's an Olympian. She just was in the Tokyo Olympics where she had to bow out. And yet, you know, you're not going to find her without a smile on her face and giving back. And like, she's my example. And like, no way in hell Simone Biles is going to ever reply to us, much less agree to work with us. So like, who else? I kept asking that question. And then at the same time, Amy Bream, this CrossFit athlete who was born with one leg, just amazing, amazing person, went viral on this video she had, like 11 million views. So we reached out to both of them. And Simone, her agent, answered first. She's like, tell me more. And she said, here's what is a little bit of a hiccup, though. Simone will only do multi-year deals and will only do it is if everyone in her family unanimously agrees to work with a partner. Like, oh, okay. So we shot a video. And we shot a video just, you know, just like this, where several of the people on my team explained why she should work with a cybersecurity company and why we're different and why as a company, this is what we believe in. And they said, okay. And so, I mean, got a put out a huge thank you to Dean, our CEO, and the rest of the team who agreed to this crazy idea. We had never done anything like it. I had never done anything like it in my career. And then they just decided to trust me and say, all right, sounds crazy. Let's do it. And so we entered into a 2-year deal, and we've done several different videos along this series that we're calling Controlling Complexity. The first was about fundamentals, right? The idea, and you'll see the parallel here, right? The same fundamentals that our cybersecurity practitioners have, repetition and learning and growing, is the same thing that an athlete has to do, you know, the tens of thousands, if not millions of repetitions to build up that expertise. And then the second part was about adaptation, right? Same thing in cybersecurity. The only thing that we are sure of is tomorrow's going to look different and we've got to adapt to it. And the one that I keep teasing that I'm really excited about next is about growth, right? I think, you know, adaptation is something that we all have to do, but it's our choice whether we grow from our experience or we can just keep doing the same thing over and over again and never learn from it. And I think the best of us not only adapt to overcome challenges, but they grow from it and then they give back. And so this is all about growth and about giving back. And the last thing I'll say on this, I'm happy to answer any questions, but one of my career highlights is that, so Simone works with an organization called Friends of the Children. They provide professional mentors to kids in foster care. And Amy Bream mentors a little girl that's 8 years old that had the same birth defect as she did. She's, wow. I think she's got like 12 siblings. So their medical bills are insane. And so we flew a member of Friends of the Children and this little girl, Alex, and her family. And we were interviewing them and they thought it was just an interview and they graciously did it. But in fact, for Friends of the Children, we had Simone hiding in the back and she came out and surprised them with a $50,000 check. And we did the same thing for the family of that little girl. Amy came out. There were lots of tears and we did the same thing. So for both of them, we were able to donate $50,000 to them, which helped a lot. It opened up a chapter of Friends of the Children in Houston and it alleviated a lot of the medical bills for that little girl's family. So if you haven't checked it out, I implore you to go to our website, Exonius.com. You'll see a little Exonius Plus thing in the top right bar that'll show you all the videos. But that was like, it's going to be tough to top. I think we can do it. It's going to be a real challenge to do it.
Well, I'll make sure we put a link to that and also to Friends of the Children in the show notes if people want to get involved with that. It sounds like an extraordinary cause. It really does. Wow, that sounds amazing. So what 3 tips would you give to someone who is looking to really push the company forward and using marketing as the battering ram to do that?
Yeah, I think the first is to get the story as simple as you can and then simplify it a little bit more. I think you are going to be facing a very crowded market, whether it's for your category or not. If you're in security or technology in general, it doesn't really matter. There's just a lot of noise there. I would find the way that you stand out in a way that grabs attention, but grabs attention doesn't have them walk away knowing everything you do. And I think that's probably a good second tip, which is remember the goal. And the goal of any presentation or demo or deck is not to get someone to walk away with expert knowledge of what you do to the point where they're going to write you a PO. I think we all fall for that. I think we all try to throw as much information as we possibly can, thinking if they just knew what we had, they'd buy it. But if the goal is to get to the next call, don't tell them everything. Just get to the point where they understand your approach. I always said at the beginning, you know, my job in marketing isn't to sell you anything, but if I can get you to agree that our approach would solve your problem, I'm 9/10 of the way there. And I think that also is a great handoff point between sales and marketing, between marketing and sales. Sorry. I think, you know, the job of sales is something that it's as much art as it is science. And the people that do this for a living are great at it. At some point you have to say, we've done our part and they're going to do their job. So I don't want to have to go too far down the line and try to get them to answer a test on the history of our product. That's not our job. And then the third thing is, I think I alluded to it before, which is ask for help. You know, one of my favorite things I've ever done is the RSA Innovation Sandbox when we won in 2019. And every year, like two or three people will reach out to me and say, we're finalists. Can you take a look at my presentation? I will do that no matter what. If I got to do it at 3 a.m, I will. And I think everyone is like that. And it's very rare that people will reach out and ask other people for help. But the probability that they'll do it is like 90%. That's what I found. And sure, some people will say no, but so what? And I think a lot of us have too much pride to say, hey, can you help me with this? Or can you give me your advice? For some reason, we just don't do that as much. And I've always found that when I've done that in the past, people are always willing to help. And anytime somebody reaches out to me, I do the same. So just be resourceful and ask the other people that have been there instead of, you know, learning the hard stuff on your own. I think you can always benefit from someone that's been there, done that. And it's also good to form a relationship. So, I mean, it's a little tiny piece of advice, but it'll pay off more than the other two. I guarantee it.
I have to say, I mean, all three of them really resonate with me, but the third one in particular, because in my own personal experience, when I started this podcast, this is actually the second podcast that I started. The first one was a complete and utter disaster. And I've been very open about this. And it was a complete and utter, it really was a train wreck. And I couldn't work out what I'd done wrong. But what I did, I was at the time, this was in the summer of 2020, I was guesting on a lot of other people's podcasts. So what I did when people were asking me to be on their podcasts, I was, I kind of did a bit of research beforehand of, okay, well, who are the successful ones? Who are the not quite successful? But I still asked each of them if I could have 10, 15 minutes of their time. And then from that, learned what it was the successful podcasters were doing, that the ones that weren't successful weren't doing. And then from that, I was able to build out a playbook that's led us to, you know, have this podcast, which, you know, thankfully has been very, very successful. But it all came from asking for help. And yeah, I completely agree. I mean, that third point really resonated with me.
It's as much a gift to the person you're asking than it is to you.
Mm.
Because it's recognition that, hey, someone thinks that you know what you're talking about, that you're an expert in this, and people just love giving back. And it's very rare that they don't. I mean, sure, people could be busy, but, you know, I think the act of asking someone for their advice and their help is as much a gift to them as it is to you.
Yeah. And in particular, if they know that they're not going to be kind of hoodwinked into being sold something at the end. If it's a genuine, hey, I want your advice, as opposed to I'm using this as a precursor to get on a sales call. And as long as you're genuine, yeah, I've found, yeah, absolutely. But it's, I think of all the people that I asked, I think I got like maybe two or three people that just said no. But okay.
But that's okay. You were at no before you asked. So exactly. it didn't cost you anything.
Exactly. What was it that the Joe DiMaggio said? You know, I missed every single pitch that I watched Sail By. You know, it's no more of a no than it was before. So, you know. Okay, cool. So what's next for you and for Axonis? I know there's something really exciting coming in a couple of weeks, so we won't talk about that. But other than that, what can you tell us that's coming down the pipe from Axonis?
Yeah, so we have RSA next week, which is the biggest event in cybersecurity. And I always look at that as there's no better way to test your messaging than to repeat it 100 times face-to-face by someone that already doesn't trust you. So that I love. It's like the focus group of the year. So 50 of us will be in San Francisco at a beautiful booth giving demos. And I get to see my friends that I only see once a year. So it's always something I love, and I'm looking forward to that. And then, you know, Black Hat in August. So we got a bunch of events coming up. We've got a bunch of product news coming out soon. And then, like you said, we've got the last thing that we're doing with Simone Biles here in May. And so we'll have another video coming out very soon. And we actually find out later this summer, if we are a nominee for an award, I'm not even going to say the name of, because it sounds ridiculous to say out loud, but I'll say this, if we are nominated, then there won't be a person in the world that doesn't hear it, because I will scream it from the rooftop. So we've got a lot going on there.
Great stuff. And if people wanted to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to do that?
LinkedIn. I'm terrible on Twitter. So LinkedIn is the way to go. It's just, I'm Nathan W. Burke on LinkedIn, or just email me, just Nathan@Exonius.com. You can't spell Exonius. I don't blame you. AXONIUS. And that's where you can see all the videos as well.
Fantastic. And I'll make sure there are links to all that in the show notes below. Nathan, thank you so much for your time. You're a very, very hard man to pin down. And from the quality of this conversation, I can absolutely understand why. Your time is very, very precious. And I'm really, really grateful that you gave some of it to us today. And so, Nathan Burke, thank you so much for coming into the conference room.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Coming up next week on the conference room, I'll be talking to social media marketing expert, Austin Armstrong.
But that's really been the style, and the execution is just testing and doubling down on what I've seen work. And this was a style that just hit for me.
Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it. And make sure you visit our website, theconferenceroompodcast.com, to see all the other episodes and to get access to the show notes and resources mentioned in this episode. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your network, or better still, go on to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other podcast platform and leave us a 5-star review. It'll only take you a moment, but it'll mean the world to us. And please don't hesitate to tell us which topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes. To get in touch, drop us a line in the comments section or send us a message on social media. Just search for The Conference Room Podcast or me, Simon Lader, on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or TikTok. I'm always open to a conversation. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you'll be alerted when a new episode goes live every week. Thanks so much for listening to The Conference Room, and until next time, keep talking.